il corner dentro, il colpo di testa, Zapata, Zapata, dovrebbe essere gol, è gol, Zapata, lo dice la Goal Line Technology, al 97esimo, il Milan trova il 2-2, impazzisce la curva sud.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by AJ for episode 22.
What's up, everyone? Back after the international break. We took a week off. Happy to be back.
Yeah, we were hoping to record something in between the Juve and the Inter game, but then when it came down to it, we thought, let's just recap both games and make it, you know, pretty significant episode. But before we get into that, AJ, you had a visitor, didn't you, from Norway recently?
Yeah, so one of my really good friends, big person on Milan Twitter, Waleed, as I'm sure most of you know him. If you don't, his Twitter is, I think, at officially Wally. Check him out. He's a cool dude. One of my good friends flew out from Norway, spent the week with us, had a 10-day trip, so figured it was a good time to do with the international break, and we ended the trip, actually, with the Juve game, so that was kind of cool. Get to watch it with a long-distance friend.
Apart from the result.
Right, yeah.
It's cool, and the reason I brought it up is, and I think you mentioned this in a Twitter post, or it might have been Wally, but I can't remember. But just how amazing social media can be in terms of people with common interests actually meeting up, like from all walks of life. And it is really cool. Like, I couldn't believe it when you said that he was coming over. I just find it really cool that two Milan fans have sort of met. And I've met some amazing people through the Milan Twitter community as well. People that I've, you know, since been to games with at San Siro, you know, been to cup finals with, and it just reinforces my belief that despite the sometimes I'll log on to Milan Twitter and shake my head at some of the stuff that I see. I'm not talking about anyone in particular, Fred. But you know, it is an amazing place at the end of the day, and it's great that people can meet up, and you know, it's all good stuff, isn't it? At the end of the day, we all support the same team, so.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how technology can connect the world like this. You know, in our parents' day and age, they obviously didn't have social media, and so to my parents, it was a pretty weird foreign concept that I was having a friend fly out from Norway that I had never met in person before. But I don't know, we just connect really well and had a great time. Met all my good friends here and set them up with a job interview at one of the local hospitals, so. You know, fingers crossed, he'll be a permanent fixture out here coming pretty soon.
That'd be buzzing, yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Right, well, we've got a couple of games to get through in this episode. Unfortunately, we're going to have to start with the bad. Well, good performance, bad result. Juventus away on Saturday was an unfortunate 3-1 loss. I did forecast it. You know, I don't mean to brag or anything, but I did predict us to lose the game because we seem to have a horrible record at what's now Allianz Stadium, but Juventus Stadium, and before that the Olimpico Torino. But Dybala got the opener for them. Bonucci equalised, deservedly so as well, before half time, but then they scored twice in the final 11 minutes through Cuadrado and Khedira to win 3-1. I was on my way back from Newcastle because I'd been to watch the Huddersfield game, so unfortunately I missed this. I managed to stream maybe 10 minutes while my mobile signal was good enough, but then after that, it, you know, because I was on the train, it kept cutting out, etc. AJ, you did see the game, right?
Yeah, I got to watch the full game.
Yeah.
It was...
go on, give us your summary.
So, we were the much better team. I mean, above and beyond, we were the better team. We started off shaky, and that was evident by Dybala's 8th-minute goal. A lot of people thought that Donnarumma could have done better on it, but it honestly, like, it was a weird ball. It wasn't just like a shot from wide that Donnarumma just should have been able to save. I mean, it took a strange bounce towards the end, and I think that kind of threw him off there. But without a doubt, it was a fantastic strike from Paulo Dybala. And on top of that, it was also our defender's fault and our midfielder's fault, the way they were positioned. We just kind of, we weren't awake yet or something. I'm not sure what was going on there, but we let it in and almost immediately bounced back, you know, with the mentality-wise. And it was actually pretty cool. So I don't know if you guys follow me, you've probably seen, I've make a lot of predictions during the games, and for whatever reason lately, I've been spot on with all of them. With Bonucci's goal, I didn't predict Bonucci. In fact, a day in advance, I said Andre Silva gets his third in three games around the 33rd minute. Well, then it was the 29th minute, and it was Bonucci. So it was around that range. It was kind of close. But we lined up for the corner, and I had Waleed and another friend in my house. We're watching it, and we're all kind of bummed. And I was like, no worries, guys. We score this one. And then Bonucci did it, and we went insane. I mean, we screamed so loud, and just the fact that Bonucci celebrated in front of his old home support, that was awesome. And he had even said afterwards that he had planned on not doing it because he was a loyal servant to the team for 7 years. He won everything in his career with them. And I respect that. I understand not wanting to celebrate against them. But he said when they went out for the pitch inspection, all the Juve support was booing him, jeering, you know, whistles. And then it happened every time. Yeah, absolutely. And it happened every single time that he would touch the ball. And he said that a few minutes into the game, he just knew that if he were to score, that he was going to celebrate. And it was awesome. I mean, you could see it, just the fire. And when he's wagging that finger in the circle, oh, man, that was great. I mean, that was one of my favorite things to see of the season, even if we lost the game. Just seeing it was so cool.
Absolutely.
We didn't lay off at really any point. Now, when... I believe who was the first substitution that kind of changed it? Oh, Kalinic came on, shocker, for Silva, and that was really odd. They had brought on Juan Cuadrado pretty recently before that. I think it was it was exactly 4 minutes that he came on in the 61st before Kalinic in the 65th. He came on, and I really had a feeling. I thought, that's a lot of pace for us to handle. We don't do pace well. And we're replacing one of our better players with one of our worst players. So I thought that was going to be bad. And then Montolivo came on. Now, Biglio was on a yellow already. But at that point, that yellow had earned him the suspension against Inter. So I don't necessarily agree with taking him off. And it showed. As soon as Montolivo came on, he really just was not ready for it. And we got punished for it. You know, 3 minutes after, Cuadrado, right down the side, scores it. And then Khedira tapped it in after Hakan almost scored. He hit a strike from probably 35 yards out that hit the crossbar. And I think that kind of killed the morale. When that happened, everyone really was kind of like, geez, we're not going to be able to
it's
do
not
it.
Our day, yeah.
And I think that's Khedira doesn't score there if we kept the mentality up. We may not have won, but Khedira wouldn't have scored that goal. And he got a tap in towards the end of the 87th minute. And mentally, we were defeated before that. But all in all, we played a great game. And Gattuso had some comments afterwards where he said that the mentality dropped off and that that's not acceptable. We need to play to the end. And he's 100% right. We saw it a lot this season where Juve were struggling in 0-0 or 1-1 situations. And then in stoppage time, they'd get the game winner. Because they never stopped. Then that's what a winning team does, and that's where we need to be at. We're almost there, but we're not quite yet. We have a little bit more work to do.
Yeah, it's a very good summary. I mean, while you were talking about the game there, I've watched the highlights, which have finally been uploaded by the Serie A channel. Obviously, I'd seen Bonucci's goal, but I wanted to see Juve's goals in a bit more clarity. First goal's disappointing because if there's one man that you don't want to award space to on the edge of the box, it's Dybala. And there were, I'd say there were four guys who were quite close to him. Hang on, let me just rewind this. So he gets found by a very easy pass, and you're looking at Bonaventura, I think, there, who's arguably the man to blame. And it's a good finish. It is actually a really good finish, but that's what you know Dybala's capable of. So if there's one man that you mark tight, especially in and around the edge of the box, it's him. So I think Gattuso won't be very happy with that, and how easy it was for Pjanic to just... I think that's Pjanic. To just thread the ball through to him there. That'll be disappointing for him. The equaliser sounds like we deserved it. It was a good set piece. I think our set piece delivery in recent weeks has been lacking a bit. We put in good crosses from open play, but set pieces, we don't seem to threaten too much. And I'd love to know when the last corner we scored was before that. I mean, directly from, obviously, Andrea Silva scored the winner when he stabbed home a loose ball, technically from a corner, I suppose. But just in terms of straight up corner comes in and a straight up header, it feels like it's something that doesn't happen very often for us. So it was nice to see Bonucci score, and like you say, against his old team with the reaction that he'd got, you just knew it was one of those scripts that was already written in a way. And I'm delighted that he scored and got to silence his old team momentarily anyway. I mean, their winner, their second goal was just, it's terrible marking. Cuadrado should never be allowed to steal in round at the back post there. I don't really know who is to blame for it. I mean, they get the ball here, and so Khedira gets a lot of space to cross, but I think it's Çalhanoğlu who should be, interestingly, I think it's Çalhanoğlu who should be checking over his left shoulder, but he doesn't, and by the time he does, the ball's on the corner of the 6-yard box, and Cuadrado has met it perfectly. So that's a little bit disappointing that, you know, the players haven't tracked the runners, and if there's a team that's going to punish your errors like that, it's definitely Juventus. And then the third goal, well, it's a pretty good finish. Donnarumma's wrong-footed, but again, you could argue that there was an opportunity to jockey him out, and Kessié, he just sort of ball chase him rather than actually putting a foot in. But, you know, it was one of those games where we had gone a long time without being beaten in the league, and it had to come to an end eventually. And if there was a place where it was going to come to an end, it was probably going to be away at Juventus. But I think the general consensus was that we could take positives from the game into the derby. Would you agree?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, like, I started with that, was that I think we were the better team on that night. And I think most people would agree with that. You know, I wasn't even mad that we lost, because it is Juventus. They are the best team in Italy, hands down, and have proven that every year since 2012, I believe, was their first one in this run of six straight titles. Probably going to be seven this year, honestly. So really, losing to Juventus doesn't hurt you. It's your performance that you want to look at. And we did well. Obviously, we needed a win there, as well as today in the Derby, to get to Champions League. But honestly, at this point, the Champions League was such an uphill battle because of the first half of the season that we never should have been in a position to where a win at Juve was necessary, because no team has a plan of, well, we'll beat Juve and that's how we'll achieve our goals, you know?
Yeah.
Unless you're going for the Scudetto, obviously, which anyone who thought we were was just wasn't the case. We were never going to do that in year one. But yeah, I mean, we had a great performance. I'm not mad.
No, I think it's easy sometimes. I mean, Gattuso in his post-match comments did kind of say nobody's going to remember the performance, it's all about the result. But I think that's more the type of manager that he is, and he's obviously a man of honour when it comes to basically the badge, the Milan crest, and you know, he wants to see us pick up results, and then I guess you worry about the performance. But you know, I've said before, and I'll say again, we've always, you look back at our best teams in history, we've always struggled to play Juventus away, because they always seem to have been dominant, always seem to have had our number in recent years, and it's like, well, you know, I don't think this season's any different. You can't really expect to go there and go toe-to-toe with a team that is, sadly, probably years ahead of where we are. But, you know, that's it. You move on. We'll get them next year, hopefully.
Hopefully get them this year in the cup final.
Oh, yeah, that would be ideal revenge as well. But then in between, something which I guess we better talk... It was in between, wasn't it?
So,
was it Conte's injury? Was it just before?
Oh, man, he's been gone so long. I genuinely had to think about today if he's
played
at all.
So I think what had happened was they said that he'd suffered a knock on his knee just before the game, before the Juve game, which meant
it was a couple days before.
Yeah, and then it came out between the Juve game and the Inter game that he was going to be out for 4 months now, isn't it? It's going to be September before he's back. How big a blow is that, and how sorry do you feel for him?
It's a huge blow. It's a huge personal blow. As far as the team, I think Calabria has really shown his worth. He's developed into a player that is arguably better than Conte now. Now, obviously, I'm just saying that without seeing Conte play since, I believe, September, maybe August. So it's been a while since we've seen Conte in action. From a personal point of view, there's nothing worse for your morale than coming back from an injury and re-aggravating the exact same injury, having to get a second surgery days before you're supposed to make your return. It's, you know, there's things in life that just aren't fair, and that's definitely one of them. Now he's supposed to be out till next September, which puts it at almost a full year that he was out, and that'll start next season without him. Do we look for a new right back over the summer? Who knows? But it's definitely a tough one.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is definitely sort of have to feel sorry for him on a personal note, because he's worked so hard to recover and to get into a position where, you know, he could help us out in this critical run of games, including the Juve and the Inter games. You know, we talked before in a previous episode about, I'm going way back here, I think it was when he was first injured, about shutting him down for the season and just making sure that he's back for pre-season so he can have a full pre-season with us and he's ready for next season. Mm-hmm. And now that's not even going to be possible. So it's just such a kick in the balls. For him personally more than anything, but also for the team. Because there we paid money for a player that essentially we could have waited another year for.
Yeah.
Arguably.
Be like a new signing.
You know, yeah, that's like a cynical way to look at it, obviously. But obviously wish him the best in his recovery. Fingers crossed we'll see him back out on the pitch in September. It does raise the question now though, like you said, do we need to look for a right back solution? Are these injuries going to keep reoccurring? Because ligament damage is ligament damage, and ultimately they say that when a player has a ligament problem, they're never really the same again. Don't know how true that is, but it's just one of those things. And I guess that he took a knock in training and all of a sudden it's a second surgery, so maybe that goes some way to proving the point. But like you said, Calabria has stepped up in recent weeks. I would have said, certainly before Gattuso came in, that Calabria is not a viable option moving forward at right back, but I think now he is. We'll get onto it, but he had an impressive showing in the derby game. I still think there are areas that he can work on, but as there are for a lot of players in our squad, but you know, give him a go. Where it comes into it now is a backup, I guess. There's been talks of signing Strinic. I don't know if that's done. There were people saying it was done. A fullback from Sampdoria. Naturally a left back, I think. I don't know how comfortable he'd be playing on the other side. I don't know if that's something they'd mess about with. And then, you know, you start looking at the Primavera, or like you said, do we go into the transfer market again in the summer and try pick up an auxiliary option? Abate even, you know, does he come back from his muscle issues, and can he be a decent-ish backup?
My problem is Abate was designated to be the third string right back this season, and now we have one. we need to sign a backup regardless at this point. With Conte clearly being injury prone, even if he comes back and doesn't get hurt at all next season, we still would need a third just in case. I mean, we've had multiple fullback issues this season for some reason, with Antonelli, you know, breaking every time paper touches him. Rodriguez was injured recently as well, was he not? Or maybe he was suspended, I can't remember. But there's a game where we did not have a single fullback recently. Yeah, I mean, and everyone on the right gets injured, so I don't know what it is with Milan Labs, but we can't keep a fullback healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know what it is either. It did get into a very, very sorry state of affairs, didn't it, when we basically had no fit left-back to play. And then, you know, you start thinking about when we were talking about in January with the potential of Luca Antonelli leaving on a free, and we were like, yep, do it, just let him go. If he wants to go, let him go. He's been a good servant to the club. And it's like, wow, we really are not in a position to just offload useful depth. Especially if we're going to keep having injury problems. So I think it's something to bear in mind that things keep happening, and you know, Murphy's Law, innit? Everything that can go wrong will go wrong. So you've got to prepare for the worst. But yeah, obviously the main thing is want to wish speedy recovery to Conte, and yeah, see him out there as soon as possible. So we'll move on to tonight's game. We're recording this not long after the Derby della Madonnina. It was a 0-0 draw, but it wasn't shy of interesting moments. Mauro Icardi, the man who seems to haunt most of us after that hat trick in the first game. He let us off the hook today. He missed two open goals, and that came after he'd scored a goal in the first half where he was about maybe 6 inches offside. But VAR got that one right. Didn't play very well. Milan, we had one decent chance, really, which was a Bonucci header from a Calhanoglu free kick. If we were looking to bounce back in a formidable way, this wasn't really the performance to back it up, was it?
No, and we honestly, we played terrible the first 10-15 minutes. We played absolutely horrible. Inter used the same game plan that Arsenal used against us, which was high pressure and using pace on the wings, and that messes with us. We've seen it time and time again that we need people that can handle the pace. And they really pushed it on us the first 10 minutes, really throughout the entire first half, but specifically in that first 10 minutes. I don't remember which minute it was that the goal was called back for Icardi, but that was a minor turning point for us. Once that happened, we kind of started picking it up together and said, okay, they're obviously here to play. We just were given this chance. Now let's do something about it. And that's kind of when it turned around. And like you said, props to VAR for even catching that, because everyone, including myself, saw and said, that's onside. That is perfectly onside. That is the best strike a forward could have, is right there onside. And then zoom in and, you know, it's a couple toes offside, something that no one's going to see. So that alone was impressive that VAR was able to do that and not save the day, but help us out a little bit there. And then we had one of our own get called off, not by VAR, by Jacinei, because it was really far off. But Cutrone, with arguably the goal of his career, bicycle kick in the box from, I can't remember who the cross was from. Or no, it wasn't even a cross. It was a deep pass.
Kessie flick, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was a Kessie flick. And beautiful bicycle into the bottom corner there, but called off. He was about a meter off, so that one was rightfully called off as well. And then
literally almost upstaged Ronaldo within 24 hours.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, it was one of the best bicycles in a long time. Probably, let's see, what's a better bicycle? Zlatan's 40-yarder against England with Sweden. That's
Oh, mate, come on. There's no need to bring that up. Keeper was off his line. Don't count.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a great goal.
It was a good goal.
And then Icardi missed the post, or missed the post. Sorry, I'm used to saying Icardi hit the post, but he missed the net this time. Just went wide of it. And how far out do you think he was that first one?
Oh, 5 yards maybe.
Yeah, if that. I mean, he was.
I don't think for the first one there's any excuse. He has to put that in.
And see, I feel like the first one has the right contact than the second one, because the first one, it was almost like it was I don't remember what they call it, but when they kind of click their heels and hit it with the back foot. And I just feel like those are hard, because it was getting passed to him, and I watched him in slow-mo a couple times, and he was trying to hit it with his lead foot, but it went through him, and so he hit it with the back foot, and it just it went just shy of the post. But the second that really saved us. It was the 91st, 92nd minute. And
it's one of those where you think for the second one, if the cross had been 1 mile per hour slower even.
Oh, yeah.
You think he definitely connects with that. But I think he was just a little bit behind it because of the pace of the cross. But he needed to be that quick to get through Donnarumma, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. And that one I thought went in after watching the first time, because the ball took a weird turn at the last second. I mean, it was going straight and then just curled outside just a hair, and then went straight again on the edge of the post. And so watching it on TV, and for whatever reason, where I live, BN Sports is the only channel that shows us, and they don't broadcast in fucking HD, so I'm watching in the Stone Ages. But in standard definition television, it looked like the ball went into the net and just kept rolling on, and then it went through. I was like, wait, what? That's not in? And then the game ended. So we are lucky to escape with 1 point. We're also unlucky to not get the win, though. As strange as it sounds, we had quite a few, not quite a few, but a couple clear-cut chances. You mentioned Bonucci's header from a Hakan cross. That was a great one. Or no, it was a free kick, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, and then...
From the left side, yeah.
From the right side, there was one towards the end. Suso was running in, clears it off the line. It was going out for a goal kick, and the incredible cross. And Danovic is far post on this one. He's about to be beaten, and Kalinic jumps up. The ball literally connects on his forehead right where every header should. All Kalinic has to do is just put a little force in his head forward, and that ball's going in straight towards goal. I'm not even going to say that it had to go in, but any striker on earth gets that at least on target or towards the goal. This ball drops straight down as if he did. I don't even know how physically he did that. It was like he chested it down with his head somehow, and it just went to his side, not even towards his feet. And yeah, I mean, that we could have won right there, and all the giraffe jokes would have been gone. I wouldn't have made a meme of him on Twitter later after the game. But we
had to. Everyone should check that out.
Yeah, it's funny. But yeah, Kalinic just kind of ruined it there. We all were mad because Gattuso brought in Kalinic instead of Andre Silva. After the game, it was revealed that Andre Silva's grandfather did pass away earlier today, and that is why he didn't play. He went straight to Portugal after the game. So, you know, heard some thoughts, prayers go out to Andre Silva's family. Hopefully he gets through it. Definitely a tough time losing someone in your family. So understand why he didn't play today. But you can't help but think that he could have won it for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like you said, definitely thoughts with him and everything. It's one of those things where in the game where obviously the news hadn't really come out, it's like, why would you not bring on Andre Silva? And now it all makes perfect sense kind of thing. It was one of those decisions that went against all logic, but then you find out and it's like, oh no, that was the logic. So yeah, hopefully Andre will get through it and everything. But yeah, Kalinic wasteful. That's all I can say. I'm yet to see anything to suggest that he is as good a finisher as was made out when he came to join us. Just movement seems to be... He just puts himself about. I mean, there was a couple of moments when he came on where I thought, you know, he's done well there. Particularly when he drifted out wide once and ran the ball and sort of into the final third, I thought, yeah, okay. You know, he's meant to be a target man, and he's done good. He's done good there. And then there was that one where the ball was sort of looping up, and he bullied Miranda, and like held him off, and then fed it back, and thought, okay, that's exactly the kind of player he is. He should be brought on to cause an absolute nuisance. But yeah, going back to the game overall, I think, like you say, we were kind of lucky to get a point from it. They certainly created the better in terms of clear-cut opportunities. On another day, you know, Icardi maybe does bag a couple of those. And maybe we couldn't have had any arguments if they had won that 1-0. But I'll definitely take the draw. It doesn't really feel like revenge for the defeat earlier in the season, but I suppose if we go on and win the cup, then we can look at the cup win as a form of revenge. So, yeah, that's it. We'll another one where, you know, we'll get them next time. We'll get them next time. Montolivo, like, how bad was he?
That, to me, is why we played so bad in the first half and arguably why we didn't win. If we had Biglia, I guarantee I put this on everything. I guarantee we would have won. The way Biglia is able to control a game, the pitch, the midfield, everything, the way he falls back and helps out the defense is just so critical, especially when you see Montolivo trying to replicate that and he doesn't extend his leg far enough, or he extends it too far and gets nutmegged, or he just misses, or he gets spun around. I mean, Montolivo was a world-class midfielder in 2010. But this is 2018, and he's nowhere near that. I was in charge of FIFA rankings, I would have him at like a silver 73. I mean, he's really just not there anymore. And it's not even to be rude against him, because he has been a loyal servant to the club. But as time's come and passed, that's why we replaced him. And it showed that we just need more depth. We don't have the depth to make these changes to have people on suspensions. I think we're going to really miss Bonucci sometime before the end of the season here. He's one yellow away from suspension, and that could happen. And we play Napoli, or we play Torino, or we play any of these teams that are going to be decently tough games. And if we're missing another starter such as Bonucci, it's going to be tough. But luckily, defense is one of the positions we do have a backup in that's respectable in Musacchio, but it's still going to be tough.
Yeah, this is it. And you start to realize how important certain players have been since Gattuso came in terms of just the way the whole team functions. Like, you know, you think of Belia and the player that he was brought in to be, sort of the register in the 4-3-3 and the player that the whole system kind of worked around. And then you lose him for a game and you bring in a replacement who is supposed to be, I won't say an expert in that position, but, you know, Montolivo's played enough games at register to understand the role. And you just realise how much we miss certain players. And you can't expect the backups to be doing the same job. I mean, if it was up to me, I might have given Locatelli a game because I think that his energy would have been certainly more useful to us than Montolivo's misplaced passes and his general, you know, being knackered after 60 minutes. But yeah, you're right as well about players like Bonucci and, you know, suspensions. That's why it's so important to have a good deep squad.
Yeah, hopefully Bonucci gets his yellow tactically against Torino. That way he misses Benevento. But then again, Benevento did draw 3-3 with us last time. So who knows? It might not help.
I mean, we were saying Benevento beat AS Verona 3-0 tonight, and we lost to them 3-0.
That's true. That's very true.
So that's 6 goals better than us. one thing I do also want to talk about quickly while we're on the subject of midfield struggles is Giacomo Bonaventura. He's not been the same player that we've come to love for weeks now.
I think the criticism today was a lot harsher than deserved. Not in the past weeks, though. I think he was kind of regaining it a little bit. He had a nice flick on that would have been a fantastic assist for Cutrone today had he been able to get that shot with some pace behind it. But he did that. He beat quite a few players off the ball, which ultimately did lead to him getting dispossessed at one point. I think he dribbled past 3 people and then dribbled past himself and gave away possession. So sparks of his old self are coming back, but he's definitely not at the level that we need him to be at or that we're used to him being at.
Yeah, this is it. And he's been, it's easy to remember what has just been and I suppose easy to forget what he's been for us since he joined. And that is one of our most impressive, most consistent players. You know, when he was out with that injury, it was like, we are going to miss him. And you know, since he's had his struggles, there are people just talking about, oh, let's sell him. No, let's get rid of him, whatever we can. Let's upgrade in that area. Honestly, if you have an informed Bonaventura, he's one of the most influential midfielders in the league. And I don't think it's a good idea to write him off now by any stretch. And like you say, I don't really think that his performance today was terrible, especially in the second half. You know, whenever we tried to drive the ball forward, he did that. But I think, honestly, he seems like a player that in the tough games this season has been playing with the shackles on. I think his role is perhaps... the role that he wants is perhaps the one that Kessie has in terms of being given that license to roam quite far forward and make runs into the box. Like, you see Kessie get into the byline all the time. Bonaventura, he tends to stay more on the edge of the box, or he drifts out wide to provide some kind of overlap for the fullback. It's, you know, I don't think he's being played entirely to his strengths at the moment either. But you know, we don't have another option, and he scored some crucial goals. I mean, scored a header against Lazio, was it, in the home win? I think it was.
I believe so.
He's bloody boyhood Milan fan. You can't turn on him all of a sudden. You know, it's where you should channel your support to just hope that he keeps, well, keeps his head down and improves and gets over it, which he will. I mean, he's 28 years old. He's been in the league for a while. He knows what it takes. And no, if anyone knows more than anyone else who needs to improve, then it's him. You know, he knows his game, and you got to trust that he'll get better. Yeah, that's it. I mean, anything to add on the game?
No, I think that they really think that covers it. I mean, I think you're spot on with your assessment of Bonaventura. I haven't thought of it until you just said that, but more the Kessié role would make sense. I wonder why they're doing it that way. I mean, obviously I know why they're doing it that way, but I think Bonaventura, I don't think I know, Bonaventura is a much better shot than Kessié. So why we don't give him that freedom to make the runs, I don't know. I think that would help him a lot because he is one of our more creative players. I think just because of Kessié's strength is why they're not doing it for him. Plus, you need to have two different type of midfielders. So it's definitely a unique situation that is worth looking at. I don't think you're too far off on that.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting one to try and find the balance. The midfield in the 4-3-3 is all about balance. We'll find the answer eventually. And obviously, Gattuso, it looks like he's going to have a full pre-season to work with the squad, because just before we started recording, Sky reported that Gattuso has reached an agreement with Milan over a new deal running until 2021. He's going to earn around 2 million euros per year. Your first reaction when you saw that?
Love it. I think it's great, especially coming today after so many people were quick to say Gattuso out, that he doesn't know what he's doing, that they need to reconsider extending him after losing to fucking Juve and then a draw in a game they didn't have his best players. I think it's fantastic that they did it now. Just kills all those agendas. It's something I love to see. Gattuso's been incredible. I believe 9 wins, 2 draws, and 3 losses, something like that, since he's taken over in the league.
Sounds right, yeah.
That's a very solid, solid record, especially when you look at the losses in the beginning. I mean, the first couple games, he took over Montella's team. He didn't have his own yet. And I mean that they were out of shape. They didn't have his mentality or fitness or training behind him. So you can't...
Low on confidence, right, which is huge as well.
So you can't hold the Benevento draw against him. I believe it was Atalanta that beat us. You know, those early ones, you really can't hold it against Gattuso. When he finally was able to get consistent training and create his team, we've been on a ridiculous unbeaten run. And then, we had that loss to Hayes, which was a disaster, no doubt about it. But then we bounced back, and we're just now starting to have some topsy-turvy form with the 2 losses to Arsenal, which... arguably, we were better than our Arsenal in the full tie. The loss against Juve, which we were better than them in. And this draw against Inter, which we really didn't deserve it, but could have won had we had star players. So I still don't think Gattuso's made a wrong move. Maybe some questionable subs along the way, but every coach is going to do something that you disagree with. And I think Gattuso is wholeheartedly deserving of the extension. I would have liked to have seen it at the end of the season just to see where we're at, see what options are available. But I have no problems with him doing it now.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with everything you said. I am a big fan of, like you say, shutting up the doubters. And I feel like it is going to be a massive boost to both Gattuso and the players between now and the end of the season, which I think perhaps explains the timing, is that this squad of players knows that they're going to be working with that manager for longer than just till the end of the season, which I think that's a pretty big deal psychologically for the group. And I think the most important thing to remember with Gattuso is, in coaching terms, you know, he's inexperienced and he's always learning. So yeah, he's going to make a couple of bad subs along the way, maybe a couple of questionable tactical calls, but he's still learning. He's a young coach, and he's only going to keep getting better as he learns and adapts to the league and the players around him, etc. So I think it's only right that we reward him for what he's done so far, which is a remarkable job of turning around what was essentially a sinking ship. Like you say, we've hit a bit of choppy water recently. I don't know why I'm going with this ship analogy, but whatever. But yeah, let him ride out the wave, and hopefully you can take us to beautiful shores.
You're really going with that boat analogy.
Yeah. Don't know why it just felt right. So I'm happy with it, and I don't know what the salary is like. I won't pretend to be an expert when it comes to how much coaches earn. So I don't know if 2 million's a big deal or not. I don't know if it's possible to find that kind of thing out.
I know it's a big boost from where it was at on the Primavera contract. Wasn't like 130,000.
2017-18 coach salaries. Here we go.
I know, at least in America, the way it works is college sport coaches tend to be the highest paid people in each state. The basketball coach for the University of Arizona, where I live by, is making like $2.5 million a year. So American sports coaches obviously get more money than abroad because we're ridiculous here. That's what we do. But I don't think 2 million is that far off what it should be.
I've actually got the totals here. So, Allegri earns 7 million per year on his current deal.
Disgusting.
Spalletti earns 4 million per year. So he's earning half of what Spalletti earns, and arguably he's tactically matched Spalletti tonight. Interestingly, Montella was on 3 million when we sacked him per year. Looking around, oh, I'm struggling to read the graphic. Eusebio Di Francesco is on 1.5 million a year.
Wow.
At Roma. So, like, wow, what a bargain appointment that's been. I think that's about right where he slots in, to be fair. Because you can't give him 4 million a year yet, because he's not really proven himself yet. But arguably Spalletti hasn't really either. I hope it gets to a point where he's on more than that, because he'll have earned it. That's it for Gattuso. So we might as well answer these questions. For the first time, we've put a tweet out before we started recording the podcast asking you if you've got any questions about the team, anything about the team, if it's about a recent game, if it's about a particular player, you know, Mercato strategy, whatever. So we've got some questions in. The first one is from @ACM Buckeyes, guy called Metropole, that's his Twitter name anyway. It's quite a longish question, so we'll answer it in parts. First of all, which players do you think will leave if Milan don't make the Champions League? AJ, you might as well start off.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty easy one for everyone. Gigio, I think he'll leave if we don't make Champions League. And I think Suso's going to leave whether we make it or not. Probably an unpopular opinion, but I don't think he stays.
Just those two?
Yeah, those are the only two big ones. I mean, there might be a few more here and there. Hopefully some of the lower level guys leave anyways.
I assume the question is aimed at big players that will leave, because, you know, we all know what kind of the other players that are probably going to leave. But big players, I agree. I think Donnarumma's going to leave. I don't think that's entirely down to him. I think it's mainly going to be because of Raiola. I think Donnarumma would happily stay around even if we didn't make the Champions League, to be fair.
Yeah, I agree.
Because he's not old. He's not like he's 25. It's like, right, I really need to start playing Champions League football now. I need to start making... He's got four or five years to stick around and see if Milan make it there, which I think they will, purely based on the cyclical nature of Serie A. But I think he's going to go because Raiola just simply doesn't like our management, and it's a shame. But, you know, I think the door will be open for him to come back if he doesn't leave in controversial circumstances. And then it comes down to... Suso, yes, but I think the right offer would have to arrive.
Well, he has a release clause of like 40 million, doesn't he?
Well, he does at the moment, but they are talking about a potential new deal, aren't they? I think Suso or his agent did recently come out and say that they were going to sit down and talk about a new deal, which would be good if we could raise that release clause. But even still... Is 50 million his current release clause?
I thought it was 40. I thought it was real 40. Low.
Yeah, it's low considering how important he is to us, but, you know, it requires a team to take a punt on him. And I wouldn't like to guess at what team that is. I don't think he's a Premier League type of player at all. I don't think you can afford a player in the Premier League that doesn't get on the ball for 30 minutes and then does one or two mm-hmm. things. And that's not me dissing Suso. I'm just that is the kind of player that he is. You know, he plays the simple passes, etc. But it's more about the moments of brilliance that he produces rather than the constant brilliance.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know. Atletico Madrid have been linked. I suppose that could happen.
Well, his kids and his family are still in Spain, correct?
I didn't know that.
I'm thinking of Morata. I'm pretty sure I'm thinking of Morata. I don't know why I said Suso. I don't know.
I say Suso posts pictures with his wife quite often.
Yeah, but so, I don't think he has any kids, so it can't be him. Because he's my age. Yeah, just silent. I hope he doesn't have any kids. I don't.
making you feel inadequate now. Yeah, and then apart from him, I mean, I tweeted something from at Kilpin Chronicle the other day, so purely out of reaction to the comments that Bonucci made where he was sort of pressuring the board, saying that we need more important players to sign for us in the summer because we need to raise the level in training. I just thought those comments were interesting. Gattuso came out after and said Bonucci shouldn't have made comments like that. For me, that implies that he's getting a bit restless perhaps about the situation financially surrounding the club. And, you know, I don't know. I just get this feeling that he's in his prime now and he needs to win trophies. And if he's going to go a season here without winning a full season without winning a single trophy with us, then maybe, you know, he might get itchy feet again and he might look to manufacture a move. But then, as someone quite rightly pointed out, it was personal circumstances that meant that he ended up here. Which I suppose when you consider that he rejected Chelsea and Man City, you know, you could argue he's going to stay around then, isn't he? Because there's nowhere else in Italy that he's going to move, really.
Right.
But I think that's about it, really, in terms of big players. Yeah. Yeah, it's Kalinic is gone, but I don't really count him as a big player. I just,
me either.
I think he'll go to China. So I'm going on to the second part of the question. If Suso asks to leave, or if Suso leaves, who's a realistic target to replace him? The guy suggested Alan Saint-Maximin, or Maximin, I don't know how to say that, or Christian Pavon. Do you know anything about either of them?
I've heard a lot of good things about Maximin. I haven't watched him, so I really don't know. That's the guy at Saint-Étienne, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah, and we are actually linked with him.
Right, we're linked with both those players. So, I mean, they're both realistic and likely scenarios that we get them. I know Walid is a big Saint-Étienne fan and loves that guy. He was hyping him up for a whole week. So I'm just going to roll with it and say I think that's a great choice. And then Christian Pavon.
Oh, he's actually currently... Sorry, he did play for Saint-Étienne and he's now playing for Nice.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
But right. Yeah, go on.
Christian Pavon, I'm less inclined to like. I don't know how old he is, but I feel like anyone that's above 20 still playing in Argentina is probably not the best call.
22.
Yeah, see, that's right on the cusp of where like he might still blossom into world class, or he might just kind of fizzle out. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a problem signing him because Suso needs a backup anyway. So if Suso stays, I like the idea of Pavon. If Suso leaves, why not both? I think they're both.
I think we need another winger anyway.
Yeah, we really do. We need another right winger. Suso's played almost every single game. You know, we have Borini as a backup, but is that really who you want to be trusting as your backup for every single position? I mean, he's played them all, so.
Kind of leads into the next part of the question. This guy believes that we need more dynamic players in the team to improve. So I'm thinking instantly, he's talking about dynamic players, players who make things happen like Suso does. The first name that popped into my head, because we've been linked with him, Memphis Depay. So throw that name at you. Would you like us to sign him? I think we talked about him before.
Yeah, I'm torn on that one because I liked him before he went to Man U and he did terrible there. Now he's back in France. But then again, you know, a lot of like Man U hasn't been good since Fergie retired. I think they've had one decent season and that's it. So it's maybe he is still a good player. I don't know. I'm not against it, but I'm not 100% for it. If we signed him, I would say cool. If we didn't, you know, I wouldn't cry about it.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you. For me, it'd have to be for the right price. I noticed that in his he did an interview recently, basically didn't rule it out at all. He said, you know, a club like that would interest me. So maybe there is more to it. But I'd certainly take him because he offers something different to what either of our current wingers currently do. So
right, who knows? We'll see how that one. We need pace. So he is a quick guy. It is actually not that bad of a move.
Yeah. So the last part of the question, which we've basically already talked about, he says, do you think Gattuso is still the man for the job? I think so. Most coaches go through a funk, but I believe he will only succeed if the board backs him in the Mercato. Obviously, we've talked about the kind of guy, the kind of manager that Gattuso is. But how important do you think it is that the board gives him some money to spend?
I think it is pretty important. I think Gattuso will be able to transform any player that he has to at least close to the level that he expects, or at least get them to give their all. But I think Bonucci's right in what he said about we need to sign some international stars. And I think Gattuso would be a lot more successful with them, as any manager would be, if they had, say, like a Pep Guardiola war chest for signings, you know? And real quick, just because I don't want to overlook the other guy that asked a question, this guy that we're speaking about right now, AC and Buckeyes, he asked about Gattuso, and the same question was also asked by at GlamFan310, so his question was also, do you think Gattuso is the right man for the job? But and we have talked about that a little bit already before the question, so I'll make it quick, even though I've been ranting here. Yes, I do. I think he is.
Yeah, spot on. Just going back to the part of the question there from ACM Buckeyes, I do think it is important to an extent that they back Gattuso in the Mercato, but I also think that Gattuso is the kind of manager that will get the most out of the current players in the squad. Like you mentioned, it's amazing what he's done with the squad that's broken. He's basically picked up the broken pieces and glued them back together. Another really weird analogy that I've dropped in there. Yeah, this might be titled the analogy episode. But yeah, I think that we need to do wise business, and that doesn't mean spending money that we don't have. I think it's important to spend within our boundaries. We don't know what those boundaries are yet, but there's no point, you know, running the club into the ground, because I think Gattuso will probably come out and say that the current group of guys he has is certainly good enough squad to finish in the top four, and if he'd have had the full season at it, then that's probably where we'd be. So yeah, let's move on. We got a question from at Samir Mohammed 72. So Samir says, again, there's a few questions in this tweet, which is good. How can Suso improve?
Honestly,
AJ, how long have you got here?
I don't think he's going to improve at all. I mean, he could learn more tricks than just cutting inside. He could get faster somehow. I think Suso isn't at his like cap as far as what he could do, but I think he has a low ceiling as far as how he can improve. I think he's kind of where he's going to be. He might get better at what he does, but I don't think he's going to be picking up any new tricks.
I'm with you. I think he's you know what you're getting with him, and that's basically what I mentioned before. He's not a guy who's going to provide constant moments of brilliance, but he will provide enough to pop up and win games. And I think his role, certainly under Gattuso, has been to be more of a provider than the man who goes out and gets the goals. We're relying on him for goals in the early part of the season. But yeah, how can he improve? I guess the answer is become more consistent, and also keep working on his weaker foot so he has he's a genuine double threat. But I don't think he's going to reinvent the kind of player that he is overnight. And if he improves and becomes the all-round winger and, you know, the all-round just the all-round winger, then he won't be with us for very long because a top club will snap him up before we manage to get to where we want to be. So, yeah. And then next part of the question. Why does Jack always get away with playing? Right. So why does Bonaventura get away with playing so many bad matches, but the others don't?
I think Samir's being a little harsh. He's played some bad games, but I don't think he's played that many. Today specifically wasn't that bad. And the reality is we don't have many people to play in place of him. And we saw the disaster that Montolivo put on today, as well as the last 30 minutes against Juve. So he's not the guy to do it. Locatelli, for whatever reason, hasn't earned Gattuso's trust. And that's saying something because he came from the youth team. So I don't know. I think we don't really have a person to put in his place, which is the next part of his question, is we need a backup for him or a replacement. Not really a question, but a statement. And I agree with that. We do need a backup or a replacement. You know, he's been a long servant to the club. He's been a good one, but he's a little out of form, and he just kind of needs a rest, maybe.
Danny Ceballos, been linked with him.
As a
possible back rotation. Yeah, I really like Ceballos as well. I didn't know much about him until we got the links, so I've started looking at some of his, not highlight videos, but just like some bits and pieces from scouting reports, etc. It sounds like the kind of player that'd flourish in Serie A, to be honest, because technical players stand out in Serie A. So he could be the backup or replacement that Samir is alluding to, in my opinion. So the next part of the question, would you rather have Alexandre Pato or Nikola Kalinic?
Any striker that costs less, I will take over Kalinic. I think the reason Kalinic gets so much hate is because of the price of his loan. You know, Lapadula is a worse player than him, but he was super cheap, and he tried hard, and he really liked the club, and people liked him for that. Whereas Kalinic is actually doing better than Lapadula, and people hate Kalinic, and that's because he doesn't work hard, and he costs a shit ton of money. So anyone that's cheaper, I don't care if they're on par with Kalinic's ability, I would absolutely take him, and I don't think Pato's that much better than Kalinic. Please don't shoot me.
Oof. Yeah, I'm not going to answer this question, because I'm getting sick of talking about Pato, really, because it's every 2 months an interview will come out, and, he's not ruled out a return. It's one way. Like, he wants to come back, but clearly he's not the player that he was. You know, whether that's through injuries, which was pretty much what cut short his career with us. But, you know, until the interest is mutual, then we don't really have to worry about this kind of thing. Would I rather have him at the club over Kalinic? Yes. But it's just, I don't think it's a realistic possibility at the moment, even if it would be a free transfer. I think there's more questions to be asked about the kind of player Pato is. Moving on, next part, 8 games remaining. Can we reach top 4? They only had games left to play at Napoli at home and Atalanta away.
I'd say mathematically, obviously, yes, it is possible. Do I think we're going to do it? Probably not. It'll be tough, but don't rule anything out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't think we're going to do it now. I wouldn't rule it out 100% yet, but I don't think we're going to do it. I think we really could have done with not losing ground again, not losing ground on Inter at the weekend. So obviously we went to 8-point gap from them, and if we'd have won in the derby, then it might have been a completely different situation. We'd be optimistic because it's only 5 points. Now I would say it's definitely more ambitious than an expectation.
We have to win on the season to get Champions League, plain and simple.
So we've got 8 games remaining. I think we need to take 20 points out of 24.
Yeah, and then I honestly think it might be more that we have to take, but I'd be happy if we got 20 points. If we don't make Champions League, my ideal scenario is Lazio somehow pulling off fourth, we get fifth, and Inter drops to sixth. That would be cool. I don't see it, though.
Yeah, Inter seem to have picked up since Spalletti absolutely went off on them, which is quite annoying.
Yeah. But remember, we definitely have Europa League for next season. That's all but guaranteed. Even though we're only in sixth and we're only 4 points clear of it, seventh this year will get Europa League as well, because Juve and us are in the final for the Coppa Italia. If they win, then it goes to seventh, which worst case scenario is us. If we win, then it goes to us anyway. So we're going to have European football next season. It's just probably not going to be Champions League.
Yeah, I really wanted Champions League, but the Europa League's been fun, I suppose.
Right, you know, and next year, hopefully, we don't
ever heard of.
Yeah, and next year, hopefully, there's not an Arsenal or an Atletico Madrid or any other big team that can kind of shit on us.
Yeah. We can dream. So, here we go. Alex has asked a question. Genuine question as well this time. For those who don't know, @Viola_Alex_1 is one of the writers at Sempre Milan. But asks a decent question. Who in the current team has lived up to their price tag in terms of new arrivals?
Benucci. Yeah. That's the only one I could really think of. And Bigley.
Çalhanoğlu.
Yes, absolutely agree with that. Çalhanoğlu. I'm wearing a Çalhanoğlu jersey right now. I don't know why I didn't think of that immediately.
Kessier, I think, over time, will.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Belia, I'm obliged to say, because of today, playing without him, how much we miss him.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps his price tag, it was worth it because of how influential he is. Bonucci, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely is. I don't know why I'm thinking about it. Conte, no, we haven't got value for money for him yet, but I think it will be worth it. I don't want to be too harsh and be like, no, wasted money. Ricardo Rodriguez is one that's still up in the air for me. Barini, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd say Barini.
Antonio
Donnarumma, we got 2 clean sheets out of the guy.
Oh, and a cup win against Inter.
Yeah.
So I'd say he's been the most worth it. anyone else?
No, I'd say that kind of sums it up.
Mm-hmm. Andre Silva, of course.
I don't think he's been worth the money yet. Because how many points did we expect him to win us this season? I mean, so far he's won us 6. And, you know, the group stage of the Europa League, which I guess is solid, but I don't know. I expected more out of him. I expected 15 goals this season, to be honest.
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to get that.
No,
I don't think he's really going to get near that, which is a shame, but I think that...
This
time next season, we'll be saying something completely different. Who do you think in this team is an irreplaceable figure? So, front to back, instead of, you know, just picking off names, let's go through this. Is Donnarumma replaceable?
Yes.
Calabria?
Yes.
Bonucci?
Yes.
Wow. I'm going to disagree with you and say no on that. I think at this current moment, there is nobody that we could get in who has the experience and the leadership that he does. You're not going to be able to sell Bonucci and go out and get another type of player like Bonucci.
Fair enough. I'd agree with
that. You know, you think of the players who have the experience at that level, you're talking about centre-backs like, maybe not Ramos, Maybe. Players like Ramos, Diego Godin, you know, experienced defenders who've played at the top level for a long time and won trophies. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have him. Romagnoli.
No, he is.
Irreplaceable. One of the best young centre-backs in the world. Ricardo Rodriguez.
Yeah, he's replaceable.
He is, yeah. But I think any fullback, really.
Right, I agree.
Fullbacks go through good and bad spells more than any other player for me.
Yeah.
Position-wise. Belia?
Yeah, I'd say he's replaceable.
I'd say he's replaceable, but not with anyone in the current squad. But I think the question was more about, like, external additions.
That's
he's definitely
the way I was
replaceable.
Taking it.
Yeah. Especially for that price point for what we paid for him. I think you could sign a young guy who could fit that role.
Ruben
could
Ives.
Maybe even go out and get someone like Jorginho or something.
Yeah.
Where are we going? Kessier?
That's a tough one. I'm going to say yes, only in his current state. If you were to ask me this 3 years from now, it could potentially be a no. He could go down as one of our better box-to-box mids. But where he's at now, I think he does lack in some characteristics that he tends to use a lot, such as his shooting. He doesn't need to be shooting at all, but he tends to, so he should be better at it. I think he can be replaced. However, I wouldn't want to.
Yeah, I'm Yeah, word for word, totally agree with that. Bonaventura?
Yeah, he's replaceable.
He is, and it's sad in a way that we're so quick to admit that. Sousa?
Yes, replaceable.
Cutrone?
Yeah. He's a young striker. He's a good striker, but all strikers are replaceable.
And then Çalhanoğlu.
I mean, with players that we could get in his position, probably not. But overall, I'd say yeah.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps in hindsight, it's quite easy to just go through the team and be like, yeah, we could definitely get a player better than that. But it's not necessarily about that. It's about who realistically could we get that's better than that.
Yeah.
And I think there's a difference. Like you mentioned with strikers, you know, there are a lot of strikers available. But like you say, in terms of replacing someone like Hakan, it may be a bit more difficult. And it's same with the central defenders. It's same with, you know, players in key positions. It's who we can attract. And I suppose that is quite a big part of the question. Yeah, that's it. Question done. We're over an hour here, so I think
fly through these last couple real quick. I think we had
We
have two more. Another one of our writers, Fred. AC Milan _SA for South Africa. He said, do you think the Champions League is dead? No. The competitions can't die. As far as our hopes for it, they're just about gone.
They're on life support.
Yeah, exactly. But the competition itself, no, alive and well. Man City got upset today at 3-0. Roma scored 2 own goals, so I think that's history in itself. Definitely competition alive and well. If so, does it mean the season is over? No, because we could potentially still finish like 9th. You know, the 3 teams below us are only 4 points off. So the season's not over. Maybe the Champions League race. We can't just set off, though. We're not guaranteed where we're at now. So definitely not over. We still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and my only response to the question is, Gattuso says, as long as there's hope, we'll fight for the Champions League. And I totally agree with that. But all it is now is hope rather than an expectation. Go on, what's the second part of his question? I've lost it. Oh, there was a second question, was there?
You answered both of it. It was, does this mean the season's over?
Gotcha. Yeah. Perfect.
And then there's one last question, which we kind of touched on already, so we'll just go over it quickly. It's from @Sourcey with 4 Ys. He said, would you bring in a winger and play Hakan at Jack's position? My quick answer is no. I would bring in a midfielder and play them in Jack's position and leave Hakan where he's at, because I think Hakan is our best winger. I think he's better than Suso, and I think Jack is a midfielder through and through, but he's more of a box-to-box, and that's why he's been struggling.
Yeah, I think as well, Çalhanoğlu, if you were to play more centrally, I think it would work against his strengths. I think he's quite good at finding space out wide that perhaps wouldn't exist in the position that Jack plays. Also think that he doesn't have the defensive work rate to play that position. So I don't think it's as simple as just moving him to central midfield and buying an out-and-out winger. I think you need to take a look at the balance of the team. I think that's quite a big deal. That's it.
Yeah, that's...
Questions answered.
That
so, yeah, thank you. Thank you to everyone who sent in a question. Sorry to those of you who send them in too late. I'm assuming we're probably going to get a couple more after we finish recording. But, you know, we can always answer them next time or whenever. I think that's it. Anything else to add?
No, I think we're at a pretty long one here, so I think we're good, unless you got anything else.
I've just thought we have a game. We have a game we should talk about. Sunday night, we play Sassuolo at home. Quick prediction.
3-1 us.
I'm going to say we somehow didn't concede today. So 2-0. 2-0 to us. Even though Sassuolo have been a little bit of a bogey team for us. I wouldn't mind another 4-3 game though, like the one where Locatelli scored.
I absolutely would mind that. We need to get our goal difference up. We're still not even a positive 10 goal difference.
It's almost a write off.
Yeah.
We need to win because then we've got Napoli a week after. So, We'll be back in a week then, I guess, will we, to record after the Sassuolo again?
Yeah, it'll be nice to get back on the regular schedule again. Look forward to it.
Absolutely. So in the meantime, you know where you can find us by now on social channels, but if you don't, it's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all of them /SempreMilancom. That's where you can find us on social channels. You can follow me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, or for Milan related, sometimes explicit tweets, it's at Kilpin Chronicle. AJ, where can they find you?
Yeah, you could find me on Twitter at Torgud45. That's my last number, 45, like Balotelli. I'm trying to plug my Instagram a little bit. It's not really Milan related, it's all personal stuff, but I want to grow that, so definitely follow me there as well. That's at Trillgrood11. So yeah, check that out.
He needs a girlfriend, basically.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, thank you very much to all of you who have listened to this special 1 hour 10 episode, and we will catch you in a week's time. Thank you and goodbye.